Okay. So, hello everyone. Welcome to our fourth and last meeting of our Israel Studies seminar for this term. And we have the honor to have our own Akefet Anzi. Akefet Anzi is a PhD student in the Department of Jewish History and Contemporary Jewry. Her dissertation supervised by Professor Yifat Weiss and Dan Porat. This year, Akefet is Leo Beck Fellow, there's Student Stiftung, the Deutsche Volks, I guess. Her research since her master's degree has focused on the history of adult education in Israel. During her master's degree, she dealt with the activities of the Hebrew University in the field of adult education and published several articles based on the results of her research. Her current research focuses on teaching the Hebrew language to adults in Israel. And along these activities, she also teaches history in Hebrew at the Hartman High School for Girls in Jerusalem. Floor is yours.
Thank you. So I will speak English, but everything is in Hebrew, so it will be a mixture, interesting mixture. And let us begin with the slide. What do you see? It's a question to you. What do you see? Ready?
A map.
A map. Okay, a map of the land of Israel.
Yes.
With a boat. Which name? The name Tel Aviv, it was a special ship. Yeah. And what else? Words in Hebrew. Yeah. Ole Olam, yeah. Which is masculine and feminine forms of one who immigrates to Israel. And also Olim Olot, plural forms. Yam, the word Yam, yeah. Sea, and Oniya. Yeah. So we have a map of the land of Israel, a boat, a ship, Ole Olam, words for, about immigration. These are the opening pages of a Hebrew textbook for adults published in Tel Aviv in 1937. The book name is Hebrew for Beginners, Ivrit Lematchilim, authored by Dr. Fania Sharadorska. It's a difficult name. Dr. Sharadorska was born in Uman. She studied pedagogy in Switzerland and earned her doctoral degree from the University of Zurich. Her dissertation was a study of the educational foundations of early rabbinic Judaism based on Tanaitic sources. She immigrated to Palestine in 1928 and in 1930 published her first Hebrew textbook for adults. She published earlier something for children. The first one was, the name was Lashon Va'aretz, Language and Land. It was the first textbook in which all the content was explicitly devoted to the life in the land of Israel. Daily realities, geography, the agriculture, and the experience of immigration. When the book came out, the writer Avraham Broides published a review in which he wrote that for the first time, the Hebrew word was truly connected to life. The language draws from the sources of local experience and brings us into the atmosphere of building the land. In other words, the book no longer taught Hebrew as an abstract language. He used it as a living tool, grounded in the present, to describe the pioneering experience, navigate new landscapes, and build a shared reality in Eretz Israel, in the land of Israel. 7 years later, by the time Hebrew for Beginners, Ivrit Lematchilim, appeared, with its photograph of the ship Tel Aviv, this approach had become well established. And so naturally, the book Hebrew for Beginners begins with arrival in the land. I will come back to the ship Tel Aviv later. As this example suggests, Hebrew textbook written for adult learners open a window into their time. They offer much more than vocabulary and grammar. They reflect worldviews, educational philosophies, and visions of national identity. In today's talk, I will focus on selected examples from my research. Through a close reading of these examples, I will highlight some key principles that shape the actual teaching of the Hebrew language on the ground. These materials reveal the worldviews of the textbook authors, who shape learners' perspectives through the structure and connect them to the lessons. I will touch on both pedagogical and ideological aspect of language instructions, showing how educational choices often carried broader cultural or natural significance. In doing so, I aim to situate Hebrew teaching within the wider context of nation building, the formation of modern Jewish identity, as it unfolded in the Yishuv during the Mandate period and the early years of the State of Israel. Before we turn to the examples, let me briefly introduce the broader scope of my research. The title of my dissertation is Imparting the Hebrew Language to Adults in Mandatory Palestine and the State of Israel, 1936 to 1955. For better understanding of the research and what it focuses on, I would like to explain each component of its name. First, imparting, in Hebrew, Hanchalat HaLashon. Berel Katzenelson coined it at the beginning of the 20th century to connect the Hebrew language teaching with the inheritance of transfer of cultural heritage. Hanchala, in Hebrew, it's something you transfer from someone to another. The study focuses on adults who had already completed their schooling period in the institutional education system when they arrived in Israel and had been categorized as functional adults. By functional, I mean those who had taken an adult responsibilities. For example, someone who already has a job or a family to support. The focus on adults offers a new perspective on the processes of nation building, because teaching adults requires consideration of the cultural baggage they brought with them, accepting or rejecting it, and is different from teaching children in many ways. The time frame of my research includes both mandatory Palestine period and the years following the establishment of the State of Israel. One of my main arguments in the research is that this entire period is a continuous sequence. I will not elaborate on that and on the exact reasoning behind choosing these years, but I can ground it in historical facts. You can see also the picture of a young woman with an old man from Yemen. It's part of what I want to say in my research, but not today. At the center of the research are the teachers and teaching organizers who search for ways to teach Hebrew to adults in different settings, evening classes, seminars, and ulpan, plural ulpanim, which is a unique and new setting. My research also examines teacher training for teaching adults, such as in Bet Midrash Lemorei Am, Bet Midrash for Educators, which Martin Buber, here in the picture, founded. Most Hebrew learning during the period I study took place in evening classes and not in the Ulpan. Contrary to common belief, the first official Ulpan was founded only after the establishment of the State of Israel, and even then, only a small number of people attended it. This is why I focus my research on evening classes. I will write also about the Ulpanim, but later. As you have already seen from the focus of my research, language plays a central role in shaping identity and belonging. Considering that, I feel it's important to acknowledge that my English is not so perfect. This challenge is closely tied to the topic I am presenting today. The revival of Hebrew is one of the great achievements of the Zionist movement, which shaped both national identity and everyday life in the land of Israel. For someone like me, who grew up speaking only Hebrew, switching to English for this talk is not easy, but I'm grateful for the opportunity to share this story with a wider audience. To understand how textbooks function in the broader context of my research, I rely on two conceptual frameworks that view Hebrew teaching as a historical practice. The first is the concept of literacy events, drawn from the field of new literacy studies. Scholars in this field moved away from seeing literacy as a neutral technical skill and began to treat it as a social and cultural practice. Brian Street played a key role in this shift when he distinguished between autonomous literacy, which treats literacy as a set of universal skills, and ideological literacy, which roots literacy in its cultural and social surroundings. Building on this foundation, Shirley Bryce Heath coined the term literacy events to describe concrete moments in which people engage in reading, writing, or using language, always shaped by the context in which they act. Iris Parush later extended this perspective to historical communities and showed how access to literacy shaped patterns of social mobility and cultural integration. These literacy events gain meaning only within the broader social and cultural and historical environments, which constantly shape and define how people use language. I read these literacy events through the perspective of entangled histories, an approach that looks at historical processes as shaped by interconnected developments across cultural, linguistic, and political context. Rather than viewing Hebrew education in isolation, I try to identify the multiple influences and relationships, local and transnational, that shapes these practices. For example, I examine the influence of ideas from the field of adult education that developed in Germany, since many of the Hebrew teachers in mandatory Palestine had immigrated from Germany and were familiar with educational movements there, such as the Volkshochschule movement. Another important influence came from the British Mandate authorities. British educational thinkers contributed to this field in Britain and in Israel, as Britain was one of the first places to promote adult education. I will give now just one example. In the British National Archives, I found an official letter sent in 1930 by the British Colonial Secretary Lord Passfield, you can see his name down, to all colonies. He requested information about the state of English and local language instruction in each colony for a special committee on colonial education. The response from Palestine, not in the picture, reveals the influence of British policy on the efforts to promote Hebrew instruction, an influence that to these days has received little attention in historical research. And now, back to the field. An archival source I found helped me identify the literacy events in which adult Hebrew learning took place, and through them the textbooks that were in use in the classrooms. This source is a report written by Moses Ratt, the pedagogical supervisor of the evening classes in Tel Aviv in 1940. Ratt authored the report after observing hundreds of hours of lessons, more than 200, and he describes in detail the classrooms, the teachers, and the textbooks. As maintained, his report enabled me to identify the books that teachers choose and use in their classrooms. I will present one case study to demonstrate the process. But just before describing the case study, it is important to know that Rat himself was born in Eastern Europe, lived in Krakow, and from there immigrated to Vienna during World War I. He lived in Vienna for 25 years, where he taught Hebrew in various settings. So he came to observe the classes in Tel Aviv with a great deal of experience in methods that were suited to the Jewish population in Vienna. And now, let's see. It's part of the report. So he visited a class of a teacher named Fuhrman. They learn in Bet Hamore, it's the name of a place. And the class, you can see the date, the class is Kita Aleph, first class, so the meaning is, all of them are adults, but the meaning is the first year they learn Hebrew. And he say, I read in English, Mr. Fuhrman is an experienced teacher with significant expertise in teaching adults, but he mainly uses oral storytelling without a textbook, even though two books, Elmad by Fuhrman and Tzfat Ameinu, are available to the students. Can you guess who wrote the book Tzfat Ameinu? He didn't write it, but who wrote Tzfat Ameinu? Of course, Rat wrote Tzfat Ameinu, of course. And he continue. I read only the English, it's what I marked in the Hebrew. In Mr. Fuhrman's opinion, grammar is acquired through speaking, practically without special study. But in my view, this is an illusion. Without a textbook, without reading, and without studying grammar, even a skilled teacher will only be able to instill superficial chatter in their students and not actual knowledge of the language. So, two books, two teachers, two methods. This case study allows me to examine a single literacy event in depth. It gives me the opportunity to look closely at the teachers, Rat and Fuhrman, who took a part in it, at the different educational backgrounds they brought with them, and at the teaching approaches they developed over time, with textbook, without a textbook, storytelling, grammar. The event took place in 1939, in the shadow of war and immigration, a historical moment that shaped both the classroom and its materials. While I wouldn't go into the broader context today, I will focus on the two textbooks used in the class, which reflect the tension between the teachers' approaches. So the first one is Tzfat Ameinu. As like you guess, of course, Moses Rat wrote it. And early as 1914 in Krakow, before the war, making it one of the first and most significant attempts to create a Hebrew textbook for adults, I found many testimonies in newspapers from people who studied with Tzfat Ameinu across the German-speaking world, including, among others, Franz Kafka. For example, we know that Franz Kafka learned Hebrew with this book. As you can see from the introduction of the first edition, published in Vienna, the first edition after the war, Rat wrote, Ich hege dazu Versicht, dass auch diese Ausgabe dazu beitragen wird, die Kenntnis der hebräischen Sprache zu fordern und dem Gedanken ihrer Wiederbelebung neue Freunde zu gewinnen. Dies wird der schönste Lohn meiner Mühe sein. And in English, I hold the hope that this edition too, like the others, will help promote knowledge of the Hebrew language and gain new friends for the idea of its revival. This will be the finest reward for my efforts. That is Hebrew. In Tzfat Ameinu is the language of the people, but there is no reference at all to the land. A few brief mentions of the land of Israel, do appear in Tzfat Amenu, but they portray the land as a distant and abstract goal, not as something closely tied to the Hebrew language. This separation is notable when we compare it to Ivrit Lematchilim, which begins with the immigration to the land, which link Hebrew learning to the land of Israel. In Tzfat Amenu, however, Hebrew belongs to the people, not necessarily to the land, even though historically we know a Jewish community had already taken root in Palestine and figures like Eliezer ben Yehuda were actively promoting both the language and the connection to the land. Even in later editions of Tzfat Amenu, the content of the book remained the same, consistently reflecting this perspective. Alongside its ideological message, the book also reflects a clear pedagogical approach. The first unit, you see, of the book presents only isolated words, bayit, cheder, tikra, ritzpa, names of everyday objects found in one's surroundings, with no narrative context. Alongside this vocabulary, the defined article ha, hey hayadi'ah, is introduced here in the German part and explained in great grammatical detail. Everything you must know about hey hayadi'ah. This reflects the pedagogical approach of the entire book Tzfat Amenu, which follows the grammar translation method. All grammatical rules are explained in German, and each Hebrew word is accompanied by a German translation. But as I say earlier in the case study, the learners used two textbooks, Tzfat Amenu and Elmad. Elmad, I Will Learn, was written by Ben Zion Furman, was born in Belarus and immigrated to Palestine in 1923 with his six children here in the picture. The grandchildren gave me this picture. I bring Elmand into this discussion not only because it appears in the report, but also because it represents a different approach. Not as Tzfat Amenu, it is written entirely in Hebrew, like Ivrit Lematchilim, and it follows a pedagogical method known as Hebrew in Hebrew. This method requires the teacher to use only Hebrew in the classroom. Teachers present the language through practical use, supported by illustration and demonstration, without relying on any other language. Although educators first developed this method for children in the early 20th century, applying it to adult learners marked a major shift. Adult learners already possess a fully developed conceptual world in their native language, and this approach asks them to set that aside and begin again in Hebrew, like child. To support them, the authors added to Elmad and also to Ivrit Lematchilim a dictionary. And teachers play a key role in the learning process. You cannot learn alone from Elmad and Ivrit Lematchilim. You must sit in a class and learn with a teacher. While children always rely on teachers, not always, but usually, adults often study on their own. But this method, Hebrew in Hebrew, demanded active instruction in classroom setting. Both Ivrit Lematchilim and Elmad followed this method and used only Hebrew without relying on any other language for explanation of the grammar or instruction. The fact that two textbooks already followed this method by the mid-40s, and I have found more, not shown here today, shows that Hebrew in Hebrew had become a central approach in adult education. I also bring Elmad because, as I say, despite its similarities with Ivrit Lematchilim, there are differences between them. We will see it immediately. You can see here, this is the first unit of Elmad, the dictionary, or every single word with a dictionary, and the opening passage of on the slide. And I will read it. I study Hebrew in evening classes. Every evening, 1 hour. During the day, I walk. Many people study in evening classes, men and women. They walk during the day and study in the evening. The lesson begins at 6 o'clock and ends at 7. And perhaps this is how it looks like. I created it with AI. The learner begins by learning about himself and the situation he is in. I learn in evening classes. This is the only realistic description I have found of evening classes. Adults worked all day and came to study for 1 hour in the evening, 6 o'clock in the night. Hebrew for Beginners, Ivrit Lematchilim, begins with immigration and arrival in the land of Israel. It was Sharadorska who initiated this shift in orientation, placing the Hebrew language explicitly within the geographical space of the homeland. But unlike Hebrew for Beginners, in Elmad, the emphasis is not the immigration to the land, but on the learning process itself. As I continue to read, in Elmad, I discover that the main character is not an immigrant at all, but a tourist, a young Israeli tourist. Furman's comments on the back cover of the book reveal his unique pedagogical approach. It's part of it. He wrote, "The author shared the fruits of his experience in this book. His experience as a Hebrew teacher for the adults taught him that Hebrew speech is not acquired through the rote memorization of dry grammar exercises, words and terms. A man learns only from what his heart desires." This is also the name. And in Hebrew, "En ha'adam lomed, ela mima shelibo chomed." After a day of work, they want a beautiful story, a poem, or a legend, and the author includes this in his book. He selected materials that his colleagues and he himself had provided to their adult students in evening classes. Examining Furman's statement, we can identify several key pedagogical principles that guided his approach to language instruction. First, he emphasizes experiential learning over mechanical memorization, suggesting that effective language acquisition comes through meaningful engagement rather than isolated grammar drills. Second, Furman recognizes the emotional and motivational aspects of adult learning, understanding that students who come to evening classes after a full workday need material that really interested them. Third, he acknowledges the power of narrative and cultural content as tools for language learning. Incorporating stories, poems, and legends that naturally draw learners in. And perhaps most importantly, Furman's approach reveals a deep empathy for his adult students, respecting their limited time and energy, while still providing substantive educational content. This pedagogical approach stands in contrast to the text we examined earlier of Sharadorska. While both Ivrit Lematchilim and Elmad were written entirely in Hebrew without translation, just a dictionary, they differ in their focus. Furman content centers his methodology on learners themselves, their interests, their motivations, and daily realities. Where is Sharadorska? Orient primarily towards the land of Israel and its development, emphasizing nation-building narratives rather than the learning experience itself. As we return now to the book of Sharadorska, we see that the first lesson presents immigration to the land of Israel by sea, with a boat, with a ship, immediately centering the narrative on the European immigrant who arrived by boat. For the adult learner, this experience would have been familiar. Most of people from Europe had arrived the same way. But uninitially, this focus excludes immigrants from Arab and Muslim countries, who typically came by land rather than by sea. In this context, the sea becomes a symbolic space of transformation for the European Jew, a boundary between exile and homeland, marking the passage from diaspora to rebirth in the land of Israel. It is therefore not surprising to find in Sharadorska book a disrespectful and patronizing depiction of immigrants from Yemen. As you can see here, there is a story about Zecharia, Hasabal, the porter. The story features a poor Yemeni porter named Zecharia, who has a large family and wants to learn German so he can work for immigrants from Germany. The story presents him as a simple and uneducated, in contrast to the more cultured European immigrants. The illustration you can see next to the story strengthens this image, showing the Yemenite character as poor and less modern. They are sitting on the floor without books. It's an old photo and very famous. In contrast, in the textbook of Elmad, where we remember the protagonist is a tourist, not an immigrant, we find a much broader representation of Yemeni Jews. As you can see in the pictures, there are a variety of images, as well as a text, not in the picture, written by Avraham Tabib, a Yemeni Jew, describing the community from within. In this way, Elmad offers a voice of Jew of Yemeni descent, whereas Ivrit Lematchilim, Hebrew for beginners, silences them. It's also important to know that these textbooks, both Elmad and Ivrit Lematchilim, rarely include references to Jews from other Arab and Muslim countries, only the Yemeni. And another group in the textbook is women. As you may know, Hebrew features clear grammatical distinction between masculine and feminine forms, in nouns and in verbs. Each textbook approaches this challenge differently. In the opening text we saw with the ship Tel Aviv, feminine forms appear from the very beginning. Ole, ola, masculine and feminine. Olim, plural, masculine, and olot, feminine. However, in other textbooks, they present only male characters and introduce the feminine forms only much later. As you can see in the picture, in the book, Ivrit Lematchilim, Hebrew for Beginners, which was written by a woman, there is illustrations that center also in the illustration woman. You can see here, פועלים ופועלות כותפים תפוחי זהב, והנה דינה ביניהם. Workers are picking golden apples, and here is Dina among them. It's important to see that Dina is there. It's important to see how how the character of Shardorska influenced the book. In the text of the book, women are portrayed with respect and dignity. They work in agriculture, like in the picture, alongside men. They are pioneers. They study in evening classes. They organize community meetings and much more. Overall, the textbooks written in Mandatory Palestine present Hebrew language teaching as closely tied to the land and to the Zionist activity. They differ significantly from Sfat Amenu by Moses Rat, written to only 20 years earlier in Krakow, not only in content, but also in pedagogical approach. And perhaps these two differences are connected. The shift in teaching method may reflect a shift in purpose. From mastering a national language in Sfat Amenu, all the grammar, you must know all the grammatical details, to inhabiting a national home. In Sfat Amenu, Wright provides detailed explanation of grammar rules, aiming for full mastery of the language. In contrast, the textbook written in Palestine emphasize content. They seek to transform the learner into a local Hebrew speaker, someone who lives and acts in the land of Israel and manages daily life in Hebrew. Now I think we better understand what happened in the classroom of Furman when Rat visits the class. And now, let us move forward in time to the end of the Second World War. By this point, educators in Palestine had already established a solid system of Hebrew instruction. For the first time, they wrote a textbook not for new immigrants already living in the country, but to send abroad to the displaced persons camp. This was Adam Bamoledet, a man in the homeland. I also brought it with me. On its cover, as you can see, the letters Aleph and Bet, the first two letters of the Hebrew alphabet. The title Adam Bamoledet, a man in the homeland, signals a new phase. The learner is someone who has not yet immigrated, but whom the authors envision as preparing to immigrate soon. In other words, we began our journey with Sfat Amenu, a textbook written in the diaspora to support the revival of Hebrew around the world. We then examined textbook focused on those who had already arrived in the land of Israel. And now we reach a new stage, a textbook written to prepare Jews abroad for immigration and to encourage them to see the homeland as their destination. When I found this book, first in a library and later in an old bookshop, as you can see here, I was moved to discover. Here is a picture of Shlomo Kodesh, who wrote the book. And I was moved to discover that the illustration were drawn by Shlomo Cohen Abarbanel, this person, who later became deputy head of the Mossad in Israel, and who also happened to be the brother of my grandfather. So he looks exactly like my grandfather when my grandfather was young. The first chapter of Adam Bamoledet, A Man in the Homeland, this is illustration that Uncle Shlomo, Dod Shlomo creates. It focuses on the family. The opening illustration shows working parents leaving a factory, you see the parents leaving the factory, and warmly welcoming their children returning from school. As you can see in the list of the words, the chapter connects the adult learner to their immediate surroundings and introduces family rules. Father, mother, son, daughter, parents work, children study. The emphasis on working person reflects the value of the labor movement, which, as we know, was dominant in Palestine during those years. So this is the opening. And just one example from the book is a poem, Two Letters. We have time to hear it? What do you say? So it's a poem. It was written by Avigdor Meiri. And as you can see here, you see it? No. No, you don't see it in my computer. It's open. Now you see it?
No,
we cannot see. So I can make, maybe if I will give you to
you
hear.
You will put it on my computer?
And I will try. Maybe you can hear it. Yes. But not the most, maybe, I don't know. Oops. It's my computer.
על יום לבן אצח קשה במכתב מן הגולה כותבת אם בדמעתיים לבני
It's not working together. Right. So it's a song, and we know that there is music to the song from the 30s. So it's in the book, but they can sing it also. And I will read it in English. Two letters on white paper, pure as snow. A letter came from Zagola. A mother writes with tearful eyes, To my good son in Jerusalem, your father has died, your mother is ill, come home, back to the Gola. Come home, back to the Gola. We wait for you without tears, from morning until evening. Come home, beloved son. And she repeated, and this is one letter, and he answered, on simple paper, gray as ash, a letter goes to the Gola. A pioneer writes with tearful eyes in the year, they change here, in some editions of the book, you can see it in Hebrew, from Jerusalem, forgive me, my ailing mother, I shall not return to the Gola. I shall not return to the Gola. If you still love me, come here and embrace me. I will wander no more. I will never leave this place. I will not live, I will not live. No. The poem, two letters, שני מכתבים, אין אדם במולדת. An elderly mother is alone in the diaspora. She begs her son to return home, but he clearly says no. He will not come back. This marks a new moment. To put two letters in Hebrew textbooks, it shows how strong and stable the Yishuv had become by then. Those who had arrived no longer wish to live. Palestine has become the center of gravity, drawing Jews from across the world. Adam Bamoledet, a man in the homeland, a person rooted in the homeland. And finally, we arrive at the next stage, the establishment of the State of Israel. The Ministry of Education published the textbook Elef Milim, 1,000 words, in 1954, as part of the first large campaign for language implementation, initiated by Minister of Education Ben Zion Dinur. This was the first time a Hebrew textbook for adults was written and released by an official body. All the books we have seen until now were privately published, although earlier efforts aimed to create an agreed upon textbook, only this attempt succeeded. Prior to the writing of the textbook, a group of experts selected 1,000 core words, terms, considered essential for navigating daily life in Hebrew. The idea was that with these words, an adult could function in the workplace, in the marketplace, and in everyday life. In the introduction to the book, as you can see here, Dinur wrote, imparting the language in fact means the elimination of foreignness, the removal of partitions, and a natural fusion of the diasporas. In other words, teaching the language was not only a way to connect the individual to the land, but it was also a means of connecting all inhabitants of the land to each other. These words were especially significant after the mass immigration that followed the founding of the state, when hundreds of thousands of new immigrants arrived in Israel from all corners of the world. And now let's see it in the book. As you can see, it's the page 3 or 5. The dialogue is, where is the Jew from? Me'ahin Yehudi. Where are you from? This book, Elef Milim. Where is the Jew from? And what is outstanding, I think, is the illustration. This illustration surprised me. In preliminary stages of my research, I had only encountered later editions of the book, where this image was different. They changed it later. But it's interesting to understand why they created it in this way. You can see the heads of Jews from various ethnic backgrounds, and the learner is faced with a kind of identification lineup. What does a Yemeni Jew look like? An Iraqi Jew, a Polish Jew, we tried at home. It is easy to understand why they change it, but I think the people who made this illustration actually meant to bring people together, to help immigrants recognize that someone who looks completely different from them is also Jewish, part of the same people. This example brings our journey full circle. At the beginning of the 20th century, with Sfat Amenu, adult Hebrew textbook aimed simply to connect the learner with the language of the nation. Sfat Amenu, the language of our nation. The textbook of the 30s, Elmad and Divrit Lematchilim, went further, connecting the new immigrant to the land, to the landscapes, to the pioneering activity. The textbook of the 40s, Adam Bamoledet, sought to reach every Jew in the diaspora and to present the land of Israel as a homeland, to which they must come. And now we see that the textbook of the 50s aimed to use language to connect all the Jews who had gathered in Israel to build not just a shared language, but a shared society. And that is a journey I wanted to share with you today through books, classrooms, and the voices of those who shaped Hebrew learning in the early days of the nation.
Thank you very much.